Good morning. Welcome to Backchat. I'm Hugh Chewett and your co-host today is Rachel Cartland. Rachel, good morning to you.
Good morning.
We're talking about the other certainty in life today, taxes. Ahead of the budget, the Taxation Institute and others have recently repeated claims that it's time for wholesale review of the tax system in Hong Kong. They are proposing measures, for example, to make Hong Kong more competitive, including tax breaks for key industries, promoting more fairness in the system, making it more compatible with a modern business environment and broadening the tax base. As we head to what seems to be yet another massive surplus, is there a better way for the government here to raise revenue? In the USA, Ted Cruz wants to do away with the IRS completely. Does that appeal? What are the pros and cons of a flat tax, a GST, and using tax to encourage good behaviour? What about taxing capital gains or inherited wealth? How do you tax the internet? And how do we do all this and keep it simple? Email us with your thoughts, questions and comments. Our address, backchat@rthk.hk. You can go to our Facebook page, Backchat and RTHK Radio 3, or call us 233-88266. And after 9:20, we're talking about travel problems and chaos at Guangzhou Railway Station. Joining us in our central studio, we have David Webb, shareholder activist, founder of website.com, Kenneth Leung, who's a legislator who represents the accountancy functional constituency, Anthony Tam, who's the chair of taxation faculty executive committee at the Institute of Hong Kong Institute of Certified Public Accountants, and David Yoon has joined us on the line, co-chairman of the tax subcommittee of the ACCA in Hong Kong. Kenneth Leung, maybe we'll start with you. Good morning. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Please, I know you're taxation experts, but please keep it simple for us.
Mere mortals.
As the tax system should be.
Okay. Is there any merit in kind of thinking, like, if you were to start all over again and raise revenue in Hong Kong, how would you do it? Do you think there's scope for really radically rethinking and reviewing the way that we get money?
Well, I think we have a simple tax system, and I would like to keep it simple. Mm. Now, although they are thinking about whether our tax system is fair and whether there are enough people paying tax, meaning that whether our tax base is wide or narrow, I would like to keep it that way. A simple tax system, but of course, if we look at how many people are paying tax, the number of companies, number of employee is narrow. And however, if you look at how we generated our income in the past two or three decades, we have been making quite good reports every year that there are considerable amount of surplus. And of course, bar from a few years during the economic crisis. But if I would like to choose to, reform our tax system, I would like to, first of all, impose a kind of a general tax, like a sales tax, of a very low percentage, 1 to 2%. And if there is room to decrease some of the taxes in order to increase competitiveness, I would say, why don't we just make profits tax at 16% rather than 16.5? But I think we have a very unique system because we only tax on activities carried on in Hong Kong, and which is a very specific character, which attracts business to set up business in Hong Kong.
Okay, and that's a good thing.
That's a very good thing, I think.
What about broadening the tax base? Sorry, are you in favour of a GST or not?
Well, I think GST is one of the many ways of broadening the tax system. I think Mr. Webb may have other ideas about the land taxes. And I think also Anthony may have other ideas.
And so you?
Consumption tax, yeah. GST, VAT are all possibilities.
There was quite an extensive consultation on that not so very long ago, wasn't there? And it proved so unpopular in the consultation that the government put it on one side.
But I think it still would be.
Well, nobody likes the prospect.
It's regressive. Taxes poor people who wouldn't otherwise pay tax if they have to pay tax on things that they buy. It's unnecessary because it amounts to basically a gross profits tax rather than a net profits after all other expenses. Because you take it off the top, but you still get deductions for your inputs if you're a retailer. You don't actually pay the whole amount.
Well, that's
Instead, we have a nice simple profits tax system that taxes. GDP, basically, where it's made. So I would not be in favour. Third reason not to introduce the GST is it's against the basic law. A rather important point. The Constitution of Hong Kong promises that we will be a free port, and that's not just the Kwai Chung port area, but Hong Kong itself is a free port. And if you start slapping a tax on everything that comes in through the docks, you're no longer a free port. So you end up with bonded warehouses and all of the paraphernalia that goes with not being a free port and breaking the basic law.
But doesn't our present so-called simple tax system actually facilitate a lot of tax avoidance? And wouldn't a GST...
Nothing wrong with avoidance. Evasion is illegal.
But wouldn't a GST mean that the burden might be shifted a bit more fairly? The very wealthy would have to pay a bit more for their diamonds and pearls?
No, I don't think that would be... A major factor relative to the impact on lower income people, who would then be paying GST on everything except exempt items. Maybe you'd exempt raw food but not cooked food at restaurants, for example. The diamond merchants already have to pay profits tax if they make a profit. Why try to mess around with the system at the top end of that? There are plenty of things that we should be doing to reform the tax system. So I'm in agreement with the paper in the sense that there is a need for a root and branch overhaul of our tax system. We should, for example, be adopting a flat rate of salaries tax rather than the current various schedules of 2%, 5%, 2, 7, 12, and 17. It's the only tax system in the world.
Well, that's regressive. If you want to talk about regressive tax, then
let me finish. I'll tell you why it's not regressive. At the same time, you would raise the personal allowance so that nobody pays more tax than they were before, and you would then have higher. Points at which the tax bites, but at a flat, simple rate, so you don't have to think about whether to elect for joint taxation with your spouse because of different incomes and things like that. You don't have to think about the unfairness of not being allowed to marry if you're gay and therefore not getting the tax break, because everybody would just be paying above a threshold a flat percentage rate. You'd also abolish the housing loophole where, for example, I can pay my assistant partly in rent and she only pays tax on 10% of her remaining income as rent. So it's a deeming provision which gives her a tax break. But people should be taxed on what they earn, not how they're paid. And if we abolish that, you wouldn't see so many court cases about people allegedly diddling their housing allowances because there would be no incentive to dress up remuneration that way. So abolish the deeming provision for rental reimbursements. Keep that part simple. Then there's stamp duty. If I may continue. It should be abolished. It's a frictional tax. Mm. It doesn't tax gains or profits. It just taxes the movement of property. It incentivizes people to wrap it up into companies and not pay any stamp duty at all anyway.
That would take a massive bite out of government revenue.
It would take a massive bite out of their surpluses. I mean, stamp duty didn't used to be a large factor in government revenues, but now it's huge because of what they've done to it. And it's a huge deterrent for example, for people coming to start a business here if they can't buy premises but they have to rent. Either that or they have to pay 8.5% stamp duty, which is about 2 years' rent to the government for nothing in return. And similarly, we're telling the talent that might want
you
to come
exempt
to Hong Kong.
Businesses. You could exempt businesses from the stamp duty, couldn't you, without throwing out stamp duty altogether?
Well, you'd have to define exactly what you mean by business in that sense, then. Could individuals no longer invest in office property and retail property as landlords? We're also telling talented people who we want to attract to our so-called start-me-up culture. I mean, the government's very hot at the moment on technology and incubation again, as they were in 2000. But they're also saying to people, if you come to Hong Kong, until you're a permanent resident, you'll have to pay 23.5% stamp duty if you buy a flat. So you simply can't buy a home. You will have to rent for your first 7 years in Hong Kong. That's quite a turn-off, I think.
That's tax as a... a bit of social engineering, which is not that unusual, surely.
Yeah, because it doesn't make it right, does it, Rachel? Social engineering is generally a bad thing. And then there's hoarding of revenues that goes on. I mentioned the surpluses. It's partly because of our land lease system, where the government collects 97% of the value of land up front and then charges 3% of rateable value as ground rent on new leases. And the result of that is humongous reserves, which then they are tempted to fritter away on things like the express rail link, or to stash away in the so-called future fund, claiming that it's for some unknown future purpose. Nobody knows what it is.
Okay.
So we should be instead having higher ground rents, lower land premiums, opening up the development sector and breaking up the dominance of a few big developers, and also producing a recurrent revenue stream of ground rents in the future when we will need it more to support the elderly population.
Okay, Anthony Tam, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. Do you see scope for and the point of having a large-scale review of tax in Hong Kong?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I agree with the two speakers here. Basically, you know, I do agree with Kenneth that, you know, there has to be a broader base of tax, okay, first of all, and then GST may be complicated enough, but I think it's something that we can always borrow on other countries that has been introducing GST, for example, Malaysia.
They don't have the constitutional restriction. We'd have to amend the basic law if you really want to introduce GST.
No, you can interpret it, but not amend it. It's always the case.
Yes, you could rewrite it in the back room. But basically, I'm saying it doesn't comply, and there'll be a judicial review if you try it. So
maybe you're right, David. But I think you look at the example of Singapore. I think the Singapore tax rate has actually decreased from something like 24%, if I remember correctly, down to now is this 17%, which is not much higher than Hong Kong, actually, maybe half a point. Okay. Now, the how they do it is I think a few years ago they introduced...
Sorry, you're talking about profits tax or income tax?
Profit tax. Okay. I mean, basically, the way they do it is they take that, introduce the, they call it GST at that time, and bring in some revenue, and then allow them to decrease the income tax or profit tax, as you can say, and basically now this has become very stable. Put it this way, in terms of revenue. Now,
creates a whole new infrastructure to pay for. You have to pay for thousands of more assessors to make sure people aren't fiddling their GST, as well as not fiddling their profits tax. You know, so it becomes more expensive to administer and collect. Every transaction has to be reported and so on, which maybe in Singapore is a not done thing anyway, but. Mm-hmm. You know, it does increase the friction in the system, and that's a good reason not to introduce it. But there are other taxes that we should be reviewing as well. There's a proposal, which I support, to introduce congestion pricing in Central, and it should be done in all congested areas at congested times. But at the same time, then, we should be abolishing first registration tax, for example, because it doesn't matter if you own a vehicle. It's whether you drive it on the roads and use land and land space and air pollution. That's what should be taxed. So we have road taxes potentially as congestion pricing and fuel taxes for the air pollution. And let's stick with that and abolish FRT, and then we can get rid of a whole bunch of assessors for that as well.
We're talking all the time as if the aim is simply to reform and review the tax system.
Well, it's actually public finances as a whole, Rachel. I'm sure you're going to come on to that, and we do need to say we need a root and branch review.
That's what I was about to come to, actually, I was simply going to say there seems to be an underlying assumption that government surpluses and revenues are massive, and therefore we don't need to worry about that side of the equation. But there's equally, isn't there, an argument that with some of the expenditure that's on the cards, particularly, obviously, perhaps a universal pension scheme, worry about revenues actually declining and not being...
Well, could we put that question to the other guest, actually? Maybe to David Yun, who's on the line. He's co-chairman of the tax subcommittee of the ACCA Hong Kong. Ms. Yun, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, sir. Thanks very much. ACC is actually one of the organizations that they propose a comprehensive review of our tax system. In fact, our last comprehensive review was done, say, some 40 years ago. Now, when we say reviewing the tax system, it does not necessarily mean, say, trying to find ways to increase revenue. Of course, we should look at, say, the narrow tax base and see whether or not it should look reborded, whether GST is one of the options, etc. But say, I think, say, that we need to, say, look at in parallel how a what type of retirement protection system we want. So if it is some sort of retirement system that, say, everybody like, say, Mr. Babb, Mr. Tam, and Mr. Leung can enjoy.
And civil servants.
Or only those people, say, like me, say, whose asset level is below a certain level can enjoy. It's a completely different, say, financing, say, need. So I guess this should be reviewed in parallel. The other thing is, even if we were to broaden the tax base, for example, by introducing some sort of GST or whatever, I think we can, at the same time, I think, say, Kenneth also mentioned, at the same time, we may reduce our, say, profit tax in order to make it more competitive, to attract investors and then increase our tax base. The other thing is that, say, our, say, we will also talk about whether we should keep our tax system simple, etc. In fact, our tax system now is not that simple. Although, say, it may be still simple compared to some other jurisdiction, but I think it is unavoidable that, say, some complexity will need to be introduced so that we can, say, cope with the international environment, etc.
Well, accountants are always in favour of complexity. it creates jobs in the tax advisory and assessment and avoidance sector.
Don't know, always the case, David.
Yeah, generally they are. It's just like governments are always in favour of new schemes to raise revenue and divert it. And that's really where we come into this discussion on the welfare system, is that governments tend to want to say, oh, don't worry, we'll just collect everything and then give you what you're entitled to, because we'll decide what you should get. But it's a very expensive way.
It was quite surprising to me to see that a survey recently suggested that the general public would be willing to tolerate an increase in taxation.
Well, I don't think it was
in
put
return
to them exactly.
For a universal pension I find that a little bit odd.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm not that surprised, because of the income distribution in Hong Kong, that the majority of people would benefit from a handout relative to the tax that they pay, because most people don't pay salaries tax. So that's one reason for the response. Secondly, the question was put to them in a very loaded way, is would you mind paying a little bit more tax if you had an entitlement, not specifying exactly how much more tax that would be. But even if you think that that might be a good thing, you have to bear in mind that part of our tax base, the profits which are washed through Hong Kong from mainland manufacturing, because we have a lower tax rate, part of that is very mobile. If we had a higher tax rate than the mainland's current 25% on profits, then the profits wouldn't come our way and there'd be nothing to tax at all. It's rather like stamp duty. If you raise it to a certain level, people simply don't transact and the revenue levels go down. So,
Mr. Yuen, maybe you can help. You know, one of the arguments advanced for GST is that it reduces volatility and you cut down on the peaks and troughs in revenue, but is that really true? Or, I mean, does GST just follow economic activity, and when you get a downturn, you get less money in, like any other kind of source?
I always think that GST is not really a question on tax. It is actually a political question. It shouldn't be put to an accountant. It should be put to politicians.
I think you can say tax is always political. Everything is political. Yes. Your livelihood is all political. I mean, it's how we make a choice. I think I prefer a very simple kind of sales tax, 1 or 2%.
GST is not as smooth as you might think. Yeah. I mean, you might think on the surface that, okay, well, the actual amount we spend every year doesn't vary that much. So if we just collect, say, 3% of it, it won't vary much. But the way GST systems usually work is that you also get a deduction for your inputs. So if your profit margins are shrinking, you're claiming back if you go negative on your profit margin, you're actually claiming back.
Well, there are various systems. Some of the systems don't actually do the value added calculation. We just take a 1% on the sales price.
Well, but then if you do that, you end up compounding it as the materials go through the supply chain, through the wholesaler, then the retailer, and you have to decide who's a wholesaler, who's a retailer, and it becomes very complicated.
I think there's something that I agree with Kenneth, that you know, it has to be balanced. Okay, now, I mean, GST seems to be like fair, okay, but it's not simple. Okay, that's the complication.
It seems to be, but it isn't actually.
It's not. Okay, but you look at let's say Kenny points is, I think we're going forward to like the retail sales tax. Okay, a lot of these states in the U.S. or the province, let's say in Canada, they do have sales tax. Okay, which is straightforward. Okay, you just slap on 1% or 2%. I mean, of course, the sales tax in the States is high. But
then, but imagine then the complications that, for example, if people start setting up an Amazon-type operation in Macau and shipping things to Hong Kong, would we have to declare everything when we receive it? You know, could we just buy everything online and have it sent to us from a neighboring jurisdiction that doesn't have a GST? Mm-hmm. And there's no chance that Macau will do that anytime soon because of its gambling revenues.
That raises a whole lot of other questions, doesn't it? Because isn't it true that modern ways of doing business mean that these big multinational corporations are actually, in a sense, quite slippery? I mean, there's this enormous debate going on in the UK about the very small amounts of tax currently paid by Google and Amazon. Do we suffer from that here as well?
We don't, in the sense that the EU has issues around tax competition. What was happening there was Luxembourg and Ireland in particular were having very low rates of profits tax and allowing the big multinationals to position themselves there. And that's basically about to be ruled or has been ruled illegal within the EU, and they're going to have to change all of that. So as long as you close your loopholes, for example, make sure that if a company charges royalty income on its brand, its name and brand, when it to its Hong Kong subsidiary, then that income, the royalty income, should be taxed. And I think we do that, Kenneth, don't we? We've closed that loophole about 30 years ago to make sure that people can't export profits through a brand mark like licensing.
Well, I think apart from that, I think that will be a very concerted effort by all the OECD countries to overhaul the tax law to avoid, you know, base erosion and profit shifting. That is a major task, which I think every tax authority is going to amend their domestic legislation so that any business activities carried out in this world will be taxed at least once, and that is the real theory behind the so-called BEPS legislation. And I think Hong Kong, in a year or two's time, will have to do this exercise as well, and it would be quite.
But I'm not aware that there are any glaring loopholes at the moment on that. I mean, if you're aware of them and you're exploiting them for your clients, Kenneth, that's great, but I'm not aware of any.
No, I think the so-called e-commerce, our tax legislation actually does not cater for e-commerce. For example, how is the so-called source principle applied in the case of e-commerce? Our legislation, which was a major review 40 years ago, did not cater for that. How to facilitate clarity and certainty for businessmen.
I think that is really part of the tax reform that we are looking at because basically there are two countries that are not on the source principle. One is Hong Kong, one is Singapore. But you look at all the BEPS action plans. They have not really taken into account of the source principle at all. Okay,
you mean the territorial basis of taxation?
Correct.
So what the
impact to Hong Kong going forward will be? There are more and more so-called the profits should be tied in with the economic activities, meaning that there will be more and more profit being shifted outside Hong Kong, not into Hong Kong.
Well, I think that is the way to do that because Hong Kong's profit tax rate is relatively low amongst all the developed jurisdictions. And, you know, it is quite an unimaginable for a business to shift from one low-tax jurisdiction to high-tax jurisdiction.
But that's the point about the welfare discussion, is that if we were to engage in a $100 billion a year type of welfare system where people like Kenneth and I get a universal handout when we don't need it, and all the civil servants who are already on defined benefit pensions.
Not the most recent ones.
The ones like you, Rachel.
As it happens, not me. I was on contract, but keep going. Okay.
Not you, then.
No, not me.
But anyway, those of us who, a lot of people would get it who don't need it, but you'd have to raise the rates of profits tax and salaries tax. Those two things have to be kept in line, otherwise you get arbitrage between the two of them. And when you raise those, you do start running into the fact that China only charges 25% on profits. And we, as I said earlier, we would lose profits. People would actually start choosing China rather than Hong Kong for their manufacturing profits to be taxed there, particularly if China has eventually abolished the capital controls and you can freely move the money to and fro.
I very much doubt.
Abolished. Either that or China's going to collapse, I think. So either China moves forward or its economy collapses. And therefore, it's an assumption that there will be more mobility, and that if we try to engage in a high-cost welfare system, we will end up losing taxable profits and making it unaffordable, even if you wanted to do it.
All right, let's break down for the news at 9 o'clock. We'll continue the discussion, and also going to be talking about problems on the transport system in the mainland and that chaos at the Guangzhou railway station. As an example, if you've got any thoughts on that, drop us a line, backchat@rthk.hk. We might as well announce as well that 2 weeks from yesterday, the week after the Chinese New Year, we're going to be having an election forum, our first election forum that we've ever held, I think, on Backchat. It's to do with the New Territories East constituency, and five of the candidates have all been invited, but five will be turning up for a little debate on Wednesday, and you can put your questions. You have to put them in advance, please. You can email us, backchat@rthk.hk. Questions for the contenders in the New Territories East geographical constituency. The weather, sunny periods today, rather cool in the morning. 14 degrees now. Welcome back. This is Backchat on a Thursday morning with Rachel Cartland and me, Hugh Chiverton. We're talking about possible reviews of our taxation system. How does the government get its money? How does it spend it as well? That's kind of a different topic, but we'll touch on that a little bit. We're also going to be talking later about chaos at the Guangzhou railway station. Drop us a line, backchat@rthk.hk is our email address, or you can call us 233-88266, or you can go to our Facebook page, which is Backchat on RTHK Radio 3. As I was saying just before the news, we're going to have an election forum, our first election forum, on a week yesterday. So that's kind of the Wednesday after the Chinese New Year, when all the candidates for the New Territories East constituency have been invited, and we will be having a forum, having a debate with them. I think it's the first time it's been done in English, so it should be interesting, a learning experience. That Michael Cigani and myself will be chairing that. We can't take questions live, because we're bound by kind of equal time rules and so on, but we can take questions in advance. So now's your chance to put questions, general questions concerning the constituency or anything else in Hong Kong. Questions then for our election debate is the same address, backchat@rthk.hk, and we'll try and work those in and to the program and put those to the candidates, five of whom are definitely going to join us, although all have been invited. Okay, back to today's discussion. We're joined now by David Yuen, who's co-chairman of the Tax Subcommittee, the ACTA Hong Kong. Anthony Tam, who's chair of Taxation Faculty Executive Committee at the Institute of Certified Public Accountants. Kenneth Leung, who's a legislator, represents the accountancy functional constituency, though I know he's got to go in 5 minutes. And David Webb, a shareholder activist and founder of website.com. Thank you all for joining us. Okay, let's go to some comment from listeners. John says, this is kind of a different issue, but I'll air it anyway. John says, Mr. Webb, you must be joking. Traffic in Central and in many other parts of the territory is created by illegal parking, not necessarily by the number of cars travelling on the road. Take Central as an example. Opposite to Landmark Mandarin, there are always cars parked with a driver waiting inside with a mandatory engine on. A three-lane road becomes a single lane. How many traffic police do we have? Several thousand. How many are there?
That should be addressed as well.
None.
John.
Okay. It will be very simple to put traffic wards Jordan's there. Shall we talk about tunnels then? We do spend billions of dollars to build a useless train to Guangzhou as well as a bridge to Macau. Would it bring any benefit to you, me, or the population of Hong Kong? Probably not. Why does the government not buy the eastern and western tunnels and fix the charges, same as the harbour tunnel? Quite a lot of traffic is routed to the harbour tunnel because it's the cheapest.
They don't need to buy the eastern tunnel. It's coming back in August.
Yeah, okay. ERP is just another stupid idea. To solve traffic problems, there are hundreds of different options, but this government does not seem to have any clue. Guess that our transport minister does not drive, so that is...
Well, he's got too many problems to fix, our transport minister.
Yeah.
And housing minister.
Okay. Alex says, putting land tax back to general's revenue, like it always was before screwing's up by that swire man. Ever notice private sector finance secretary always never's good? Original system, very, very good, making everybody pay, as including in price, paying for all goods, good and service. But that swire man diverts to capital works, now 30 years later, only giving us white elephants. Distort whole economy and nurture gaming system by Li Ka-shing. No needs GST, VAT or anything, just putting back the way it has always been, which is what's making Hong Kong we're used to having. Then if that not working now, we have other change later. You know my talkings,
today, not actually. I don't actually quite understand that point. Does anybody in the expert panel able to explain?
Well, Alex is showing his age because I've forgotten that they had a swire man running. I'm not quite sure what he's saying, except that back
put the land tax back into general revenue. You don't have a special land
fund. Right. Well, certainly yes. You shouldn't be siloing your revenues like that, saying here's our land capital works fund and here's our future fund and all that. You just have money, period. And the question is, why do you have so much of it? Because every time you run a surplus, you're sucking money out of the economy that could have been used more profitably by the private sector.
Kenneth, is that constitutionally possible? I thought there was some issue wrapped up with the handover that meant we end up with this land fund.
But the land fund is different from the public works fund. I think all the capital item will need to go to the public works fund. This is the government's accounting system.
It's not in the constitution.
It's not in the constitution. It can be changed. I think there is a way to reform it, to make all the revenue, the government can, whether it's revenue item or capital item, to be spent on, you know, item that's worth spending, but not siloing, like what David said, siloing, you know, income and then tack it with a kind of expenditure. That is quite a very old way of seeing how a revenue system should be run.
All right, more comment. Rod says on our Facebook page, if we have a surplus of taxes, why in heavens are you talking about adding new taxes? By Kenneth Lang. Do we want to be like stagnating Europe? Isn't raising taxes going to aggravate the surplus? If anything, we should be talking about limiting revenue. One good way would be to liberalise land sales in order to make Hong Kong more affordable. Using taxes to encourage good behaviour is a dangerous path because the majority can impose their views on the minority. This is how unmarried people or cohabiting gay couples are discriminated against in many countries that reward traditional families with less taxes. This is how churches often pay no taxes when secular organisations have to. These are just two examples. Adding a new tax like the GST, yes. Dividends or inheritance is another dangerous path because these taxes always go up and they are never repealed. They're always sold by saying that there will be a cap and that it will be a tiny tax and it will be used to save the children or something that nobody can possibly be against, like free lunches for homeless widows. One has to remember that taxation is a discouragement on production and saving. Countries are just like individuals and families. The more savings and production, the better, says Rod. Davey Yuen, do you agree with Rod? We should just be thinking about how to reduce taxes.
I think it's kind of difficult to say agree or disagree. I think one thing that we have to deal with is the aging population, that is for sure, and the narrow tax base. Whether or not, when a tax is introduced, it will forever goes up and never comes down is something that I cannot answer. But I think that I definitely agree that we should review our situations to see what tax should be imposed and what tax should be reduced or etc.
Yeah, I mean, there's a point here, which is that the Constitution, again, the basic law, requires us to run a balanced budget and to keep expenditure, government expenditure, commensurate with the growth in GDP. And the two things, one thing that follows from that is that your share of GDP as a government shouldn't be going up. And it has been. We've been hoarding away these reserves, sucking money out of the economy. And if you were to introduce a massive welfare system with a universal retirement payment, that would basically breach the basic law, because you would have to raise taxes faster than your GDP is going up, possibly even while it's going down, in order to pay for all of this. And the government has actually been budgeting to make surpluses, which is illegal under the Constitution, but no one is able to stop them from doing that. There's been no judicial review of it. There really should be, I think.
Well, presumably it's a bit difficult to balance exactly.
You won't balance exactly, but you should be smoothing out. You say, okay, this year we made a surplus, last year we made a deficit. The average of the last 5 years is either a surplus or a deficit, and we'll reduce our tax burden accordingly or increase it accordingly. So you basically have a smoothing effect. Of course, you're never going to be spot on zero balance, perfectly balanced every year, but you shouldn't be over a period of 18 years as we have since 1990. Stashing away an extra trillion Hong Kong dollars. It's just not right.
Anthony Tam, where do you stand on, because this is kind of sometimes framed as a matter of principle, whether you use taxation for what David Webb calls social engineering, whether you say, you know, you want to encourage good behaviour, whether it's environmental good behaviour or whatever it is, and therefore you reward it with tax cuts. And similarly, you know, tax cuts for certain industries, you might say for the better good of Hong Kong, you know, you want to develop this or that industry, whether it's leasing private planes or something like this, so therefore you give tax breaks, because everybody else is doing it all over the world, okay? So you've got to compete with those places in the world. Those, I mean, the arguments is, you know, is whether you...
Well, actually, in the EU, it's illegal.
Wait, David! Please! Anthony Tam, where do you stand on that?
No, I do see the point, because basically should we give incentives? Some of these so-called incentives may not attract the investment you want anyway, because you know, it has been abused, basically, I would say. Now, it has not been really utilized in an efficient manner. Now, back to the point on the...
Could you give an example of that abuse?
Well, for example, I mean, it may not be in Hong Kong, but you look at country where I come from. For example, they have this, in Canada, they have this investment tax credit that's given to high-tech industry. Mm-hmm. But I've seen that basically company can get that investment tax credit just like that, and they have so-called scientists to certify that the project is really high tech, and then they get the money.
Yes.
So I think those kind of things will happen.
Okay, yes, now. I mean, if we were to introduce an innovation and technology credit or something, or say, you know, have a government department decide which businesses are innovative and then tax them at lower rates, that would be highly distortive to the system and unfair to companies that don't qualify. You know, government shouldn't try to centrally plan the economy in that way, and that's why some of the things called for by the Taxation Institute are flat out wrong, suggesting a half rate of profits tax if you do a certain kind of business. Is not consistent with our simple and fair tax system in terms of a flat rate of profits tax on your profits.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in terms of tax incentive, we should be very careful and selective. I personally is not a fan for a tax incentive per se, because for every tax incentive, there is a cost to society as a whole. People always compare us with Singapore. Singapore has loads of tax incentives, but they come with a price for businesses, say that you have to meet certain conditions that the government impose, etc. But I believe that we should be selective in certain, say, type of tax incentive in order to be competitive, and we don't do that, say business will go to other places.
Let me give you one example. I mean, the government is introducing the so-called corporate treasury center concept, and it's still in a draft bill. And, you know, the tax rate on that will be cut to 8.5%.
Why not make it zero? I mean, you know, that's so arbitrary, right, to say half.
But the thing, though, is instead of offering that, you know, the companies would cut in, you know, loopholes and all this, then they have all these anti-avoidance rule that is really, at the end of the day, I think nobody would come just because of that incentive.
Well, it's a simple question. If they're being unfair, and I haven't analysed the corporate treasury thing, but if they're being unfair in trying to tax that at all, then set it at zero and say, we don't charge asset managers on the gains of their funds, we charge them on their fee income net of expenses, you know, do that. But otherwise, don't tinker with the system and say, oh no, for you, 8.5%, you're special, your business is more exciting to us than the one down the road, so we'll charge you a different rate. And in the EU, that there are there are laws against governments subsidising industries, basically, and propping up companies. And whenever they want to do that, they have to apply for exemptions from the Commission before they can do it.
David Webb, I slightly hesitate to raise this topic with you again, but what about the use of that?
I mean, feel Rich, free, Hugh. We're friends.
The trouble is, you read Thomas Piketty or whoever it is. You look at growing inequality around the world, and the main cause, one of the main causes of the growing inequality, that's a big problem in every country in the world, is that governments like taxing income, like charging income tax, but rich people don't get their money from income tax. They get their money from capital. Mm-hmm. And the revenue, and the government is not capturing that, is not getting the money from the very richest people. And they're running away with all the money. And that's not fair. And that in Hong Kong, the least we could do would be to introduce some kind of capital gains or to tax dividends in a way that would make the people who are most able to, pay the money. Off you go.
Thank you for raising that, because it's a mass
delusion. I'm talking about you here.
Companies pay tax on their profits before they can distribute the remainder as dividends. And if you tax the distribution, then you're double taxing profits and you're introducing an effective higher rate of tax on profits and, of course, deterring the companies from paying out the money as dividends, because instead they could just pay a very high salary to their owners as directors, and they would then just pay the salaries tax rate and the company would make no taxable profit and you'd shift from profits tax to salaries tax. So if you're going to introduce taxes on the distributions of profits after tax, then you're going to have to start looking at escalating rates of salaries tax to match that, so that people can't just take the money the other way. And then you'll still run into arbitrage issues if you try to do that, and you'll also have the simple fact that we don't tax overseas dividends, for example, because they're sourced from overseas profits which aren't taxed here. So would you then start taxing dividends on foreign investments?
How about capital gains on sales of property? That's one of the most basic taxes.
Well, no, we do. If you're trading property, as developers do, for example, or even if you're buying and selling it for renovation, then you will be taxed as your stock in trade, basically. You're taxed on the profits that you make from that. But if you are simply recording a capital gain, then don't forget that as a landlord, you'll be paying tax on the future rentals from that property. If you buy it and hold it and then later sell it, you won't be tax exempt. And then if you're talking about capital gains tax on the gains on shares, well, first of all, people will just avoid selling their shares to crystallise the gains. Secondly, when they do sell to realise a gain, what they're actually doing is recognising the increase in the expected profits from the future, because the value of a stock is the net present value of its future profits after tax. And there's the point that those profits will eventually be taxed if the company makes that money. And if you try to tax the gain in the future value of those profits, you're taxing it twice. For all those reasons, it's not the case that people like Li Ka-shing or me on our investments contribute tax. It's the companies that pay it on our behalf before they can pay us anything as dividends.
Yeah, okay. I think we've run out of time. Thank you very much indeed, David Webb. Thank you, shareholder activist, founder of website.com. A couple more comments from Alex. I'll just get it in a moment. Thank you very much indeed to Anthony Tam, chair of the Taxation Faculty Executive Committee at the Institute of Certified Public Accountants, and to David Yuen, co-chairman of the Tax Subcommittee of the ACCA Hong Kong, also speaking earlier with Kenneth Leung, the legislator.